Our scripture reading today comes from Matthew 25, 1 through 13. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took their flask of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, "Here is the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "Since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves." And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." This is the gospel of Christ.
Thanks, Tommy. Hello. Hey, I'm Nick Kessler. Hey, I go here. That's really all. I just normally sit out there where you're sitting. But Lindsay Mizell, the lead pastor, is on a sabbatical. So if you've been here the past 4 weeks, you got to hear Lindsay, and then Sarah Stokes, and then Aaron Britt, and now, well, I'm sorry. If you haven't given anything up for Lent and like done any sacrifices, you can count this. Be 40 minutes of waiting. Thanks, Tim. Hey, in all seriousness, I've realized what they're up to. So you've had Sarah and Aaron kind of fill in while Lindsay's been out. So you've got great teaching and great people. And then with 1 week left before she comes back, is that right, Daniel? She's back in a week. 1 week left before she comes back, they put me up here. As like a thing that I know is like, it's going to make it where you're like, "Oh my God, Lindsay, you will not believe who was here last week. Thank God you're back." It's going to be like the triumphal entry all over again. It's not lost on me. She thought she fooled me on that, but she didn't. I know that next week is Palm Sunday. And so you got me. You got me. You're welcome for that. I figured it out. I figured out that's what they were up to. They didn't think I would. Thought I was dumb. But I'm not. I'm smart. They were 50% wrong on that. And you can tell now that I'm smart because I'm saying percentages up here. Hey, in all seriousness, this is a gift to get to be up here with you. Because for the past while, I've had to sit and try and think how to put into words what I feel like the Lord's been telling me. And that's been helpful to me. I'm certain this will be way more beneficial for me than it is for you. And so thanks for your sacrifice. I hope that, I want to pray and then we'll get rolling. Lord, I just pray that my words would be yours, that if there would be anything in my mind that is not from you, that it'd be forgotten and that you would be heard. Come, Holy Spirit. Hey, the passage Tommy read from Matthew said, it started, "Then the kingdom of heaven," Jesus is saying this, "then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom." I think anytime Jesus starts with what the kingdom of heaven looks like, it's going to be something pretty important for us to look at. These parables that Jesus tells, these stories, I didn't originally like them. They're pretty confusing when he tells these stories. But I've grown to really like them because they start to seem a little bit like poetry. When you look at them, depending on who's looking at them or when you look at them, what circumstances are like in your life, they read a different way. It's kind of like art, like the way the light hits it. It seems to read differently at different times. And so I've really grown to like this parable. and to like parables. But when you ask other people about them, which is really fun to do with these, because when they're not really clear, people feel comfortable to answer what they mean to them. And I feel like if you ask five people what this parable meant, you might get five different answers. Today, I just hope to give you what my most recent answer is. It's different than it was a year ago, and it might be different tomorrow, but it's what I feel like I've heard the Lord saying. More than a year ago, I heard somebody, quote, somebody else, about this parable, and they asked the question, why didn't these unwise virgins, why didn't they just wait? Why were they in a hurry? That stuck in my gut, because I'd never thought about the parable in that way, because I'd always thought about it from that tone of like, hey, you got these virgins that have oil, and they were prepared, and you better be prepared, and if you're not prepared, you're in trouble. You better get your oil. Be prepared. Don't be a fool. The end times. I love it when people say end times. If you want to see a moth to a flame, say end times around me. What were we talking about? That's how I'd always heard it. And so this thought that, like, why didn't they just wait? Was like, yeah, why didn't they just wait? And so we go back to it. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. It's really made me think about, like, what Jesus is offering us here is an invitation into waiting and to knowing what it looks like to wait. It's had me ask this question of, am I waiting? How am I waiting? What am I waiting for? I've never said anything in front of people that I didn't first have my wife listen to. And her question was like, what do you mean by waiting? And the best I can come up with is this whole story to me is really just about how am I living? Because I think by waiting, I really just mean living, because I think my thought is, isn't that what life really is just waiting? Like waiting for the kingdom to come. Like that's what this feels like a roadmap to teaching me how to wait for the kingdom to come. Kingdom to come to me, through me, into our community, into our world. I mean, isn't that our great prayer? Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. That's what we're waiting on. And so I think this story that Jesus told is just a story that is a roadmap into waiting. I think he's got 4 parts, and I hope to point out those 4 parts on just how to wait well. So let's start with a little background information. You've got these 10 virgins, and they've got these lamps. So first of all, a lot of translations say lamps, but a lot say torches. And so picture lamps or torches. And so you got these 10 virgins waiting with lamps or torches, and they're waiting for the bride. But then also a lot of manuscripts include bride and bridegroom. I'm sorry, waiting for the groom. And a lot of translations say groom and bride. And so you've got these 10 virgins, and Jesus says virgins. Why does he say virgins? My understanding there is just that at this time, there was a tradition that you would have these unmarried young women who were going out with lamps or torches to lead a procession. It's like a parade. And so it's virgins because that's the best adjective to describe them. They were young, unmarried women. They're what we would call bridesmaids. And they were there to have a parade to light up the path as the groom went to go to the bride's house to grab the bride and take her to the wedding feast. And so they light up the way. And so this was this invitation to be one of the bridesmaids. And so that's what they're doing. That's a story. It's a tradition that's going on. And so it was an essential duty that was honored. It was honoring the bride and the groom. It was celebrating them. And in all honesty, if the groom went to go get the bride and it wasn't lit up, it was thought to be like, it was looked down upon. It was a major social insult. And so there's your background information. Jesus jumps straight into pointing out that these bridesmaids, that 10 of them were wise, or I'm sorry, there were 10 of them, 5 were wise and 5 were unwise. 5 brought oil with their lamps and 5 didn't. And so they're out there and they're waiting, and then all of a sudden somebody comes out yelling, the groom is coming, come out to see him. This part is interesting to me because it's like apparently 2,000 years ago, groomsmen were the same as they are now. There was always one loud person yelling. I'm sure his name was Brock. There's always one. And he starts to yell, and the bridesmaids hear this, and the 5 of them that hear it that don't have any oil for their lamps start to scramble. And they're like, oh no. And they're waking up, and Brock's getting louder. And what do? This to me is wild. What do? As the bridegroom was delayed, they'd all become drowsy and slept. But at midnight, there was a cry. Here's the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves. And while they were going to buy, it was midnight. This part is so crazy to me. It's at midnight, and they're like, what do we do? And the wise ones are like, hey, why don't you go buy some oil at midnight? And they're like, yeah, and they're off. And it's like, hey, no wonder he describes them as foolish. Like, there's no other way to describe this than foolish. Brock is so close you can hear him yelling that the groom is coming, and they take off to go buy oil. Why? That doesn't make any sense. Why did they do that? So let's put ourselves in this story. It's what fancy people call imaginative prayer. I'm going to be fancy today. But as in imaginative prayer, if we put ourselves in it, you're going to pick a character, and you're going to be a character in the story. But before you get a little too haughty and decide which character you're going to pick, I want to raise a point. When I was talking to my son Judah about this story, and I was asking him what he thought Jesus meant when he told it, or what his point of it was, one of the questions I asked him, I was like, hey, buddy, have you ever been foolish? And he went, oh, yeah. There's a lot of confidence there. He's just 10. At 40, my oh, yeah is much louder, but maybe a little sadder. I would assume you're there, too. And so before you all are sitting out there thinking that you're a bunch of wise virgins, I say maybe put yourself in the place of one of the foolish virgins, one of the foolish bridesmaids. And so listen up, you fools. Would you, if you're willing, close your eyes and let's see if we can set the scene. You picture yourself sitting on the ground because it's gotten late. Probably leaned up against a wall trying to be comfortable. You can feel the grit of sand or dirt or whatever under your hands. You're waiting and you're tired and you're dressed up in your party clothes and you've started to nod off and you're asleep and you're dreaming. And in your dreams you hear maybe some yelling and some bells ringing. And you start to realize that's not part of the dream, that's actually happening. And your eyes blink open and close as you start to kind of wake up and it gets a little bit louder. Here's the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. And you realize what's going on, and you start to gather yourself and dust yourself off and stand up. Here's the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. You start to stand up and stretch out. You're groggy. You're tight. Here's the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. And it's getting louder. And you reach, and you remember your role, and you reach for your lamp. And when you reach for your lamp, oh no. Would you stay in that feeling for a moment? Surely you've felt this before in your life. Maybe it was when it came time to turn in homework that a teacher was going to take up that you forgot or you thought they wouldn't collect. Maybe it was in college when you didn't go to your nutrition class for a couple weeks and the day you showed up there was an exam. That was oddly specific. Those of you who know me well now understand better why I eat the way I do. Maybe it was a time you were caught in a lie, and you knew there was no way out. I think you can relate. I think we can all relate to these foolish bridesmaids. In Isaiah 53, verses 6 through 8, it says this: "All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned, every one to his own way." I don't believe this parable is simply about Jesus saying, "Don't be like the foolish bridesmaids." Because I think Jesus knows we are the foolish bridesmaids. You are, and I am. Hold on to those feelings of anxiousness as you're caught with nothing to offer, no solution. Here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Now you begin to scramble, and your mind races. You look to those around you, and you've got nothing to offer. This is our situation. These are our circumstances, and I think that's the invitation Jesus is offering us through this story, is to sit and think about, how are you waiting in that moment? How are you waiting with nothing to offer? Are you scrambling? That's what I've wondered about. Do I recognize the gravity of my circumstances? And do you? Do you take the time to recognize it? I've been picturing myself sitting against this wall, looking at this lamp in my hands, and it's old and it's rusty and the seams have holes in them, and my hands are like oily because it can't even hold oil. Because I got nothing to offer. I have turned and gone astray. My head hangs. I recognize my failure. I recognize I don't have a solution. That's been the first invitation to fuller life that I've taken from this story, this roadmap. Do you recognize your true situation? Do you recognize you are one of the foolish bridesmaids? Or do you think you got a lamp ready to go? The word Jesus uses here for foolish is used 43 times throughout the Bible. It's first used in Deuteronomy. Moses uses it. He uses it when he gathers up all the people of Israel to give a speech to tell them how rebellious they were, and he's going to tell them how rebellious he knows they're going to be when he dies. And then you go through the Psalms. The Psalms reference the foolish often as scoffing at God, reviling his name, and finding confidence in themselves. The Proverbs says the foolish despise their mother and exalt themselves. Ecclesiastes refers to a foolish king who no longer receives advice or listens to advice from others. Jeremiah says, "For my people are foolish, they know me not. Hear this, O foolish and senseless people who have eyes but do not see, and who have ears but hear not." I'll stop with Ezekiel. "Thus says the Lord God, woe to the foolish prophets who follow their own spirit and have seen nothing." I think that's all of us. It's been us since the garden. We've been rebellious and selfish, and then we choose to blind and deafen ourselves so that we can then go out and try and be our own God. It's happened since the garden. So the second invitation, the second marker from this story to me comes next, and it's the hardest one. Can you sit in that? Like, one, first, can you recognize it? Are you willing to recognize you are one of the foolish bridesmaids? We are one of the foolish bridesmaids. Then can you sit in it? Can you sit there at the wall, hearing the announcement that he's coming and that you don't have a lamp? And can you sit there, or do you scramble? Do you take the time to recognize your foolishness and sit in it, or do you scramble? Do you busy yourself all of a sudden with others? Do you have any oil? You don't have any oil? Do you know where I can get some oil? Is it? What did you say? Where's oil? There's oil around the corner. Quick, there's oil. Do you know, do they take Venmo around the corner? They don't take Venmo? PayPal? Who takes PayPal? I'm going to have to call my daughter. My daughter will explain to me how to do PayPal. We just busy ourselves. Can you sit in it? Do you busy yourself? Like when you sit in your guilt and the grief, do you busy yourself? Do you numb it? Do you find ways to manipulate it so you don't have to sit in it? Or can you sit in it? Or do you scramble at midnight to the merchants to buy oil? Are you an exercise of futility? All right, third invitation. Can't happen without the first two. One, can you recognize you're one of the foolish bridesmaids? Two, can you sit there with it, or do you scramble and run off to the merchants to buy oil, to miss the groom? Three, my third question is, what are you waiting on? So are you waiting? How are you waiting? What are you waiting on? Or better, maybe the better question is, who are you waiting on? Because as I've thought about this story for a while now, the thing I keep getting hung up on is, wouldn't these bridesmaids have known the groom? They would be close to him. They got invited to be a parade for him. Wouldn't they have known him? And if they knew him, would he not have had some light? How did the groomsmen get there? Did they just wander around in the dark with Brock yelling out front? Would he have not had a light? Could they have not followed along? Could they have not followed the light of the other bridesmaids that had a light? Why did they have to take off? Who were they waiting on? Could they have not, if they really knew this groom, could they have not waited till he got there and said, I am so sorry. I've got nothing. I was caught up thinking about myself and doing things for myself, worrying about myself, and I got nothing. I don't have anything to lead the way. I'm so sorry. I don't deserve to be here. I can run and get oil. I can, but I'll miss you, and I really don't want to miss you. I'm not worthy to be here. I'm not worthy to receive you. But would you have mercy on me? And if the groom is somebody that they knew, and somebody that knew them, would he maybe say, you're a mess, but I am so glad to see you. I'm so glad you waited. Follow me. That's why you wait in the darkness. Because you know who you're waiting on. You know he wants to lead. All right, fourth point. So we're almost done. One, two, three, and four. First three have to happen for the fourth. So one, are you willing to recognize your situation? Do you realize you're one of the foolish bridesmaids? Two, are you willing to wait in that, to sit there, to not take off and scramble, but just to wait in it, in the muck? Isn't that kind of what Lent is? It's the waiting and knowing your foolishness. Three, do you know who you're waiting on? Because you're not going to wait if you don't know who you're waiting on. If you don't know you're waiting on someone who is willing to lead and be the light, you're not going to wait. Fourth invitation. Doesn't come with those without those three. But if you do those three, the fourth one, I think, just happens. If you're willing to recognize that you are foolish, that you've turned aside, you've gone your own way, you've trusted in yourself, you've been worried about yourself, and if you're willing to sit in that and recognize it, sit in your grief, and then if you know who you're waiting on, that it is the light that lights the world, that has sacrificed himself for your foolishness, that has pardoned you, you're going to be a wise bridesmaid because the only thing you're going to be able to do is react out of gratefulness. You're going to be excited. See, I think that's what the foolish, or I think that's what the wise bridesmaids, I think that's all they were. I think they were just foolish bridesmaids who realized they were foolish. They realized they were foolish, and they knew, I've got nothing to offer, and they knew the person that was coming sacrificed himself for them, pardoned himself for them. And so the only thing they could do was be excited and celebrate. They knew who was coming. They knew they had nothing to offer and they were pardoned. And so they packed up oil like it was the 4th of July. If you do the first three, the fourth just happens. Gratefulness comes and you are a light. You're going to bring a light. I think it's the fourth point on the roadmap. There's this bishop whose name, I'm going to make an acronym because I can't pronounce it, K.C. Pillai. He was Indian and was raised Hindu. And before converting to Christianity, he wrote this book called Light Through an Eastern Window. And the whole point of it was to kind of give some understanding to difficult scriptures through Eastern culture and some of their traditions. And so he said when he grew up, this procession was still happening. It was a tradition that was still happening. And he knew people and families that had these torches, and they were specially made just for this procession. And they were handed down from generation to generation. And he said he can never remember anybody forgetting to put oil in their torch. He can't even imagine that they would do it. Why not? Why didn't they forget ever? I think it's the same reason when you go to a New Year's party, somebody has remembered to bring champagne. And when you go to a birthday party, there's cake and candles. And when you go to the 4th of July, there's fireworks. Because you're excited. You're grateful and you're looking forward to it. You're anxious with anticipation. I think that's what we're offered here in this story. But to get to the 4th, you have to sit in some discomfort. Are you willing to sit in that discomfort? So these last 2 weeks of Lent leading up to Easter, I invite you to sit and wonder. To sit in the discomfort and not try and manipulate, not try and numb things, not try and busy yourself, but to sit in it and to recognize your own foolishness and then to remember who you are waiting on. In Luke chapter 1 or 2, hang on, I'll tell you. In Luke chapter 1, the father of John the Baptist, he'd been mute for a long time because he had scoffed at God. His name was Zechariah. And right after he becomes unmute, the Holy Spirit speaks to him, speaks through him. He prophesies and he says this. Because of the tender mercy of our God, whereby the sunrise shall visit us from on high, to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. That's what we're waiting on. Those are the words of God. Because of the tender mercy of our God, whereby the sunrise shall visit us from on high. You sit without a lamp and wait on the sunrise. The sunrise shall visit us on high to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, and then to guide our feet in the way of peace. That's our invitation. That's what you're called into. That's what you're made for. Right before that, he's talking about Jesus there. Right before that, I think, is our invitation to us. And you, child, will be called the prophet of the Most High. For you will go before the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation to his people. You're called to be a light. To be a light. But to carry a light, his light. That's your calling, to be a light shining on a hill because you know what you deserve, but you've been pardoned. I think we should all sing and dance like fools. Daniel or whoever's coming up here, have at it. That's my invitation, those four parts, and I ask that you sit there. Over Lent, we've been memorizing Psalm 23. And I would invite you over the next couple weeks to walk through those four parts of that story that Jesus tells. And then maybe read Psalm 129. I don't know. It goes like this. Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my pleas for mercy. If you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, that you may be feared. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits more than the watchman for the morning. More than the watchman for the morning. For with the Lord there is steadfast love and plentiful redemption. And he will redeem Israel from all his iniquities. That's what you wait on. Would you wait like that over the next couple weeks? And then remember who you wait on, because that's what Psalm 23, I think, is telling you. The Lord is my shepherd. He provides for us. He makes me lie down in green pastures, which is, I think, my favorite part, because it both means it's comfortable and there's tons of food. He leads me beside still waters, because sheep won't drink from running water, and there's no chaos there. He restores my soul, because he doesn't just take care of my body, he takes care of my whole soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness. In the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me.